Hello, everyone, and welcome to One Word E-Talk. This is a lovely Saturday afternoon, and I'm so delighted to be here with my guest, Doreen Chance. Hello, Doreen.
Hello, Evan.
Wow, this is so amazing. We haven't seen each other for what? How many years now? Like
over 30 years.
Oh, my word. I remember when I met a friend of mine in the airport, and we haven't met for over 30 years, and we were screaming in the airport, and everyone was just looking at us. Maxine Cameron, you knew her from England. Mm-hmm. And we were just screaming in the airport, and everyone just stopped and just watched us. And, you know, people were so moved by us saying, 30 years, we're screaming in the airport, 30 years, 30 years, 30 years. But here we are. So I want to thank you for coming onto the show. And I just want to say welcome to all our guests that has joined the show. Good afternoon. Don't forget to like and don't forget to share out the broadcast so that others can join. I've got Doreen Chance with me, a very powerful story. I'll introduce her later. But don't forget to like the broadcast and share out the broadcast so that others can join in and be a part of this very powerful, life-changing conversation that we're just about to have. And so I'm going to get started. Hope you're all doing well out there. I'm going to get started. And again, just welcome to One Word E-Talk. Today's authentic exchange is based on the topic, I am still here. Now, I want to welcome my guest, Doreen Chance, and I'm going to introduce her. Doreen, and I'm so humbled and honored to introduce Doreen today. Doreen was born in Kingston, Jamaica, and she attended my high school, Mannings High, and also the University of Technology in Kingston. Doreen is a chartered accountant working with Guardian Life, and she is the mother of a beautiful 17-year-old daughter. And as I said before, she is my high school classmate. We went to high school together, so we go way, way back. But Doreen has a powerful, powerful story of being an overcomer and a survivor. So Doreen, welcome once again to One Word E-Talk.
Thank you.
So we're going to start off, Doreen, by my asking the guest, what comes to mind when someone says to you, I am still here? What comes to mind when someone says to you, I am still here? And so this is the first time I'm actually going to go over to Doreen. I'm just going to let her share from her heart and share her story, and not the usual format where I'm interviewing her. I'm just going to let her share from her heart. So Doreen, let's go ahead and share your story by starting with the death of your mother in 1971.
Good evening, everyone. I would like to thank Avril for this platform to share my story. I hope at the end of it all, I'm able to motivate and to just share the goodness of God and how great he is, you know, his glory and how compassionate he is and that he loves us no matter what. It all started, as Avril says, in 1971. I was born in June 27th, 1971 in Kingston, Jamaica. And 4 months after, unfortunately, my mom died from cancer of the thyroid. You know, as a baby, just knowing that your mom is not there, you don't know her. I've never seen her. I don't know what she looks like. As a matter of fact, I've never seen a picture of her because at that time, people never usually take pictures. But all I got was a picture painted of her, this beautiful lady, brown lady with long hair, very wonderful person. And in my mind, that has been my image of her. You know, I just picture this angel watching over me. So after my mom died, I was born in Kingston. My grandmother was in Sheffield, Westmoreland. So after she got the letter, at that time, is letters and telegrams, you know, was the order of the day. Not like now when we have social media and I click on the phone call, click off a phone call and, you know, a message is sent. Yes. But my grandmother got a message that my mom, she needed to come to Kingston because her daughter had passed, which is my mom. So she and my aunt, Pinks, her name is, came to Kingston, and I have a brother who is a year older than me. So she came and she got us and took us to Westmoreland. You know, as I said, it was shocking to her because she didn't even know my mom was ill, but they came and they got me. And at that time, she was unable, but she had me until about when I was 6 years old. She realized that she was unable to take care of me the way she wanted to. So she has a cousin by the name of Mrs. Cook. And so the Mr. and Mrs. Cook wanted a child to come and live with them, but they wanted a boy. But my grandmother was not having it. She said, I have a little girl that I want to give you. I see a lot of potential in her, and she's the one that I'm giving to you. But she said, no, I want a boy. She said, no, please take her. She has a lot of potential, and I'm not taking no for an answer. So right then and there, you know, that was God working, you know. He was there working behind the scenes because he knew that I had a purpose in life and that things will come one day where I'm going to need someone who was able to help me. And he saw that my grandmother needed help to take care of me. So he presented his family, Mr. and Mrs. Cook, who I call grandma and grandpa. I saw them as my grandparents, but they were actually my adopted parents. And they said, okay, and they decided to take me. So my grandmother packed me up from Sheffield, took me to Savamar, and delivered me to them. At first, I didn't want to go, and I cried, but she said, no. At that time, I was in Sheffield. I'm known as Colleen. That's my pet name. And she said, no, Colleen, you have to stay. You know, these are wonderful people. And it was my grandmother's cousin, as I mentioned before, and she used to help them to take care of their kids. And all their kids were grown now. So she said, you have to stay. You know, they will take care of you. And because I can't take care of you, how you should be taken care of. So I was handed over to Mr. and Mrs. Cook, two wonderful people. You know, and at first, I, little girl living at home with my cousins and everybody, and being in this house, because they were living in a big house, and I was the only child there. You know, it was not what I wanted, because where in Sheffield, I was able to have people to play with, friends to play with, my relatives, cousins, and everybody. So I was there, and I cried a couple of days. And one day, I ran away, ran back home to Sheffield. My grandmother said, well, how did you reach here? Do they know you're gone? I said, no, I ran away. And she said, no. And she packed me back up and took me back to Sav. And, you know, then I realized that I was not coming out of this. I had to stay. So Mrs. Cook and Mr. and Mrs. Cook decided to take me as their child. And it was the best thing ever happened because I didn't know what was going to come. And they sent me to school. I went to Unity Primary School. Then I went to Manning's High School. And during my years in high school, in fourth form, like a year, 2 years before I was supposed to do my CSEC, my external exams, it was one December. And for some reason, I had a little bump on my foot. It didn't pain or anything, so I didn't pay it any mind. And one day I went home and I showed it to the helper. And she said, this bump is on my foot, but I don't know what it is. She asked me if it pain, I told her no. And she said, let me bathe it with some warm water. So she bathed it. At that time, people used to use salt to do everything. So she boiled, warmed the water, put the salt in it, and bathed it. She did it for a couple of days, but I didn't say anything to Mr. and Mrs. Cook, my grandparents. As I said, I called them my grandparents. And it was still there. So every holiday, I used to go down back to my grandmother, you know, and I used to wear shorts a lot. And one day I was coming up, my grandmother lived like on a slope, and I was coming up the hill, and my aunt's boyfriend at that time was sitting on the veranda, and I don't know how he saw that bump on my leg. So he called me and he said, what is that on your leg? And I said, I don't know. He said, how long was it there? I said, maybe about 2-3 weeks. This was a December during Christmas. And I said, maybe about 2-3 weeks. So did you say anything? I said, no. So he told my grandmother, and be the concerned, loving, caring person that she is. We call her Dada. Her name is Daphne Brown. We call her Dada. And she said, when you go home, you need to show it to Mr. and Mrs. Cook. And so as a matter of fact, what she did was to take me home the next day herself, and she told them about the bump on my foot. So it was a Saturday. So because we didn't know what it was, they took me to a doctor by the name of Dr. Molyneux, sorry. I know you know her, Avril, Dr. Molyneux. Yes. So she said, well, I don't know what to do at this time, so we have to do an x-ray because I can't look at it to see what is wrong. So she gave us a paper to do an x-ray, and we got it on the Monday, right? And so my grandfather took me to get the x-ray done. And after we got back the results, he took me to our family doctor, which was Dr. Carnegie. And when he saw it, when he looked at it, he showed us where, this is it, this is a chart. I don't know if you're seeing this paper. And suppose the bone is supposed to be straight, right? It starts, then right where the bump was, it bulged out, and then it came back straight again. So he said, no, something is wrong, you know. Just look a little serious. He said, this needs a bone specialist. And at that time, there were only two in Jamaica, one in Kingston and one in Montego Bay. So being in Westmoreland, Kingston was too far, so we went to Montego Bay. And God was working again because he chose the right place for me to go. So the doctor is a Haitian doctor, right? And he's this very short, dark man. And when we went there the same day, my grandfather did not waste any time. He took me to Montego Bay the same. He took me home to pack my bag, and he took me to Montego Bay the same day. So we went and we saw this doctor. And, you know, he was very friendly, very nice, a very short, dark, handsome doctor. And he looked at it and he said, he has a little, I don't know if you know how Haitians speak, but he had a little accent. And he said, you know, I can't guarantee anything at this time. I have to do, it looks a little serious. I'm not going to say what I think, but we have to do a biopsy in order to find out what's wrong. So what is it? Okay.
Sorry, Doreen, may I just interject? And how old were you at this point?
Yes, I was 15 years old. I was in my teens. I was 15. So he said, okay, we have to do a biopsy to find out what's wrong. At that time, you know, it was during Christmas. So, you know, with accidents, the hospital, the theaters were full. We couldn't get a space at Corner Regional, which is the main hospital in Montego Bay. And so he decided, he asked us if we can go private because we need to move as fast as we can. So, you know, as I said, God put me in a family that was caring, a family who was able to help me. So Mr. and Mrs. Cook spoke to their children and, you know, everything was organized and they decided to do it privately at Fairfield Hospital. So it was within a week, the biopsy was scheduled. And so it was supposed to be just a very short surgery. And it so happened that there was no precautions taken in for me to get blood because it was supposed to just go in, take out a piece of the cell, and then just get tested from there to know what it was. So I don't remember exactly what date. I think it was a Friday. And, you know, went in the afternoon and the surgery was in the evening. And they decided, after I was put to sleep and everything went, when I woke up, I was told that, you know, it is a little serious and maybe a little more serious than they thought. Because when they went in, they realized that section of the bone was very soft. When you have cheese and it melt, that is how the bone was. It was just crushing. And then you realize that.
Sorry, Doreen. So I just want to talk to the viewers because can you imagine at age 15 going in just to take a piece of your skin out just to see what this lump was? And then to discover what you're saying, Doreen, you actually discovered that your bones in that area was as though it was melted cheese.
Yes, it was very soft. It was, that's how soft it was, you know. As I said, the doctor had an idea what it was. So they decided to, they sent it to get tested. And I was told that I had astrosarcoma, which is cancer of the bone. It happened in teenagers and it's a very serious form of cancer. It's a cancer that moves very rapidly. And if it's not taken in control soon, your lifespan is very short. You know, and that the lifespan of persons who have had it, what I heard at that time was that all patients did make it, you know, and as a matter of fact, they're normally said the lifespan is up to 10 years. And I can recall of recent incidents. I don't know if anybody here might recall. There was a teenager, a footballer from Jamaica College. I think it was, no, not Jamaica College, St. George's College. I forgot his name, but he also had it and he didn't make it. And there was another little girl in the hospital. There's a program done on CVM. I forgot the name of it. And there was a little girl and she had the same thing and she didn't make it, right? So that is how serious the cancer is, because it moves very fast. And once it starts to spread, it goes straight to your lungs and then your heart, and that's it.
So I just want to interject here, because those references that you're making just happened. These were recent, right?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, recent incidents.
Okay. But I want to point out to everyone that what Doreen is sharing didn't just happen. This happened probably, what, some 30-odd years ago, 35 years ago?
Years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what the medical field was then, 35 years ago, is different now, but she's still here. Go ahead.
Right. So after the prognosis was attained, my doctor, his name is Dr. Perry Herrod. As I said, he's a Haitian doctor, but he's one of the best, you know, if not the best in my eyes. He tried his very best. He treated me as if I was his daughter. I was not just a patient to him. I was more than just a patient. You know, the care in which he administered, you know, my care, and how he was in constant dialogue with my uncle. I have an uncle who is a doctor in Canada, Dr. Don Cook. And he was in constant dialogue with him and other doctors there, you know, getting ideas and, you know, sharing notes about what was going on. He would update him on what's going on and everything. And, you know, he tried his very best. He really wanted to save my leg. He thought I was too young to lose my leg, you know. And so they decided to give me chemotherapy and radiotherapy, you know. And so it started right after, not very long after, but thank God, as I said, God is just working in my life. He has been working in my life from I was born, you know, and he ensured that I had help where my uncle was able to get the chemotherapy. At that time, chemotherapy was very scarce, not just expensive, but it was very scarce in Jamaica because we couldn't get the drug, but my uncle was able to get it and send it to us, you know, and enough doses that I needed in order to be administered to try and save my leg and save my life, you know. And so the medication came and I started getting chemotherapy. I started getting radiotherapy. And it so happened that after the biopsy was done, that small bump, as I said, it was a very small bump, started to get bigger. My leg, this is my leg right here. So the bump was like a little above the top part up here, my thigh, right? And after the biopsy, the whole of here of my leg was swollen big. Trust me. I never wanted it after I saw it because it was just swollen and it started to pain. And this little bump that never used to pain me none at all, which was basically non-existent, became this big thing, you know, and things just started to get worse. And, you know, so as I said, I started to get chemotherapy, and that's another story in itself. You know, God made man, and he made man able to produce this drug. He gave us scientists who were able to produce this drug to save our lives, you know, give them knowledge. And they came up with this thing called chemotherapy to try and save us cancer patients. And it's a drug that, not pretty, I must admit and be honest, it's not a pretty drug, but it's a drug that can save your life and did save my life. Because when I started getting it, the first episode I got, it was like a Friday evening, and I got the drug and then I went home. By the time I leave Montego Bay, I used to have to go to Montego Bay to get it to be administered, because a special doctor that had to administer it. And by the time I reached leave Mobe to go to Salve, I started getting sick. And I would just start I'm having some feelings, like I feel so weak. And by the time I reach home, I remember I had drunk some ginger beer before, and red was my favorite color at that time, but now it is. I'll tell you why. And I started to feel sick. By the time I reached home, I said I had drunk a ginger beer. I threw up everything that was inside of me. Nothing was left. Even water that I drank, I threw it up because the drug was working. And as I said, it was doing things to my body that I never like. But, you know, God gave me the strength to deal with it. So by the time I reached home, I was so sick. So for 3 days, I was in bed because I couldn't keep doing anything. My body was just so weak, and I was basically not able to do anything. I was just in bed, as I said, for those three. By Monday afternoon, I was fine. But so from Friday evening until Monday, I was just so sick. And that was just the drug working on my body. And going through this, I had like 8 doses of the chemotherapy. Then at the end of January, near to the end of January, the doctor decided for me to come in. He said, you know, he needs to monitor me more closely. So I got admitted to Connor Regional Hospital. So this young girl, 15-year-old, admitted in this hospital on a ward that had cancer patients. And that ward had just rooms. And I was in a room with some elderly people who were cancer patients, but they had different cancers from me. And that was my home for, I could say, 5 to 6 months, 5.5 months, because I had to be there. So my doctor could monitor me more and try and see what he could do to save my leg. And during that time, I can tell you, I remember, I'll rewind a little. I remember when the doctor, after we got the prognosis of the biopsy, Dr. Herod, you know, called us together to speak to us. And he said, my grandmother and my grandparents were there. And he said, you know, this is very serious and she might end up losing her leg. And my grandmother and my adopted mother, they both hugged me up and started crying and said, no, she's too young. She can't lose her leg. No, you need to save her leg. And they were there crying. And for me, in the middle of both of them, and I had to be their strength at that time. So they're crying. I'm like, why are you crying? I'm not crying. It's all about me. And I tell them, it's okay. Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. I'm going to be fine. You know, and I was there motivating them when they should be motivating me. But that's fine.
Wait, but you know what I want to say right there, Doreen, is that when I heard you say that, I said you were at that time the comforted, and you now became the comforter. And I go to 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3 to 5, that says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. And so God had comforted you at age 15. And so when your mother and your grandmother wrote down, or your aunt, because you call them different names, that's because God had comforted you. And so you were taking the comfort that God had poured out in you, and you were pouring it out into those around you at age 15. For all the viewers who are watching, what strength. What strength that this young 15-year-old could have exhibited, but by the power of God. So I want to tell you, whatever you're going through today, know that God is your comforter. Know that God will strengthen you to walk that journey. Sorry, Doreen, go ahead.
That's fine. Okay. So as I said, you know, I was able to comfort them and thank God. And I'm going to say something which I always say to myself. I'm glad it happened to me and not anybody else who was close to me, because I took it. I didn't take it hard, but they all took it harder than I did, you know, and I don't know how they would have managed, but I was able to manage because I accepted what was to be. And so as we go along, since I was admitted to the hospital and I was in there, and the doctor, Dr. Herod, was trying to save my leg, and he did everything he could, you know, and after I was admitted, the hospital became my home. that ward became my home for, as I said, 5 to 6 months, 5.5 months at least. And I had some wonderful nurses. You know, God placed me in a ward there where the nurses were just so nice. There was a nurse, I wish I remembered her name, but I don't. She's an Indian nurse. And that lady was just so awesome. She took me as if I was her daughter. So patients are not allowed where the nursing station is, but I was accepted there. It became a part of my home. The nurses there allowed me to come around there to stay with them, you know, and even that she comes on duty, she normally comes on duty in the afternoon. And every time she comes on duty, she will come into the room just to look for me and ask me if I'm okay and everything is okay. And, you know, sometimes she'll carry something for me, but she was like my mother, you know, she made me feel comfortable. All the other nurses did the same. They were very nice to me, but she was just exceptional in the sense that she became my mother in that hospital. And back to my family, Mr. Cook, what can I say about him? Mr. and Mrs. Cook. Mr. Cook used to come, when I just got admitted, he used to come to Montego Bay every single day to look for me. Every afternoon when he goes into the office, in the mornings and in the afternoon, he would leave and come and look for me. What a man he was. You know, I said it was because he's not alive anymore. And he used to come and look for me every day. And then when it was becoming very too hectic for him, where the visits became a little less, but at least 2-3 times a week, he was there to look for me. And my grandmother, Daphne, Dada, we call her. This little lady used to take bus from Sheffield every week to come and look for me and carry my food. And she would just, you know, come and look for me and, you know, and carry stuff for me, carry food. Her food was just awesome. And she made it a point of duty to do whatever she could also to make sure that I was okay. And as time went on, as I said, my doctor was trying to save my leg, but there was a point where I remember there's some doctors came down from Kingston because they heard about my case and they wanted to, you know, see what was going on. So when they came and he updated them, they said, you know, it's good for you to save her leg, but I think it's better for you to save her life. It's best if to take off her leg than to try and save a leg that might end up taking her life. That might not be the exact word, but that's exactly what they were saying. And, you know, the decision was made. The decision was put to us, and you know, we agreed. And all this time, I can tell you, up until that time, I've never cried. I didn't cry about it. I accepted because God gave me the strength and gave me the heart and gave me the will to accept what was to be, because He knew He was able to place in me the vision and the wisdom that doing that would be the best thing for me. So he allowed me to accept the fact that it had to be done. So I went along with it. I went along with God's glory, God's plan for me. His plan is that, yes, you're going to lose your leg, but that's the best thing right now. So he gave me the strength. He gave me the persona. He gave me the strength and everything to deal with it, to accept what he had in store for me, because he had something in store that was coming. And in order for me to be able to do what he wants me to do, which I am seeing now, I had to lose my leg. So I accepted it. And so the decision was taken.
I'm listening to you and I'm getting goosebumps, because here you are, you were only 16 years old.
And you had to get 16, I was 16.
You were still 15. Wow. Yeah. And you had to be a part of making this decision about your life. What God. Wow. Keep going. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, mine is fine. You can interrupt me anytime. Right. So it was in May, and you know, the decision was taken to amputate my leg. That the dates I don't remember. Please forgive me for that. And my grandfather wanted to be there before I went to the theater. And I remember he didn't reach on time, but the theater was booked for a certain time. And my the doctor, Dr. Herod, tried his very best to wait until he come, but you know, he wasn't able to reach on time. And I went into theater before he arrived, and the surgery started, and I knew nothing until about after 6 in the evening I started coming to. And at that point, I don't remember anything because I was heavily sedated. You know, surgery just started after 9 in the morning. I didn't finish until way in the evening. I was in the recovery room for a very long time. I remember one of the nurses saying to me, "Your grandfather loves you so much. He, when he came and he didn't see you, he was so angry with himself, you know." And apparently he wanted to leave early, but Mrs. Cook made him, he didn't get to leave on time because of her. And he started saying, "You see, Lou," he called her Lou. And he said, "You see, because of you, I didn't get to leave on time. I know that might, suppose something happened and I'm going to see her again." And, you know, and everything. He was angry with himself because he didn't get to see me before I went into surgery. And I didn't know all of this was going on. I was just told by the nurses. And so when he came, the doctor allowed him to come into the recovery room because he was there waiting. And I was, it was taking a very long time for the surgery to come to finish because they had to solve the bone. They had to, you know, God inspired that doctor to do a very good job on my leg. You know, the way he did, he made sure he took out all the bone. There was no bone left. He cut my leg all the way up and made sure all the bone was taken off and taken out. And he made sure he put back the area in a way that was very neat. He did some skin graft where he took off a piece of the flesh of the bottom of my foot, the back of my foot, and used it to, you know, to put over the area, make it very neat and very nice, you know. And he was just heaven sent. As I said, God was working. He was just working in my life because he put this doctor there because he knew this doctor was going to be the best that there is, the one that was able to get the vision to do what he had to do to save my life, you know, and I am so grateful and appreciative of him for that. And so the surgery went well. And as I said, Mr. Cook, I was told that he came in there, and when the doctor, they put in a gown on him, and when he came in there, they said he hugged me. He basically wanted to lift me off of the table, of the bed. And, you know, he just hugged me, and he thanked God for saving me and for the surgery going well. I was taken back to my room. And I must say, up until this time, I never cried about what was happening to me. I just accepted it. No, because I had no choice. It's either that I was going to live or I was going to die. I chose life because I love life, you know. And if losing my leg is going to save my life, then more power to it. You know, I accepted it. And so in the evening, when I started to come out of my anesthesia, I started to feel pain that I've never used to feel before, you know. I wanted to stretch out my leg and my leg was not there. And I was feeling for my leg and my leg was not there. And I started to cry and I want my leg, I want my leg, I want my leg. This is the first time I ever cried about it. And it is understandable because I was feeling, my body was going through a change where I felt like the leg was there. When I looked down, it's not there. And there's a thing called phantom pain. I don't know if you have anybody have ever heard about it. Is where when you lose a piece of your, a part of your body, then it's like the nerves trying to find back their, the veins or whatever. It's just so, it's as if you feel a lot of movement. Because right now, even talking right here, I feel some movement in the my leg that is gone. Sometimes I feel like I want to stretch up my leg and it's not there. You know, and I feel some pain that is not real pain because I'm feeling it in a leg that is gone. Right? That's why they call it phantom pain. I'm feeling these pains in a leg that is gone. Sometimes I'm sitting down and I want to stretch out my leg. And as I said, a leg that is gone, that is not there, you know, and it can be painful at times. I remember one time I was feeling it and I had to get an injection for a pain that was not, what to me is not real because it's not there. But as I said, I started to miss my leg at that time because I was going through pain and At that time, my body, I guess, was realizing that, you know, it's no longer there. And as I said, maybe searching for it or something, or my mind was just searching for something that was not there. But that just lasted for a very short time. Because as I said, God has been working in my life, because he made me accept something that was inevitable, something that had to be done. And so I got over it, and I started to heal. And I was in the hospital still, and I started to heal. God started to heal me. And my mind went back to where it was, where I accepted what was, you know, and what is. And it reached a point where when I started getting the chemotherapy, I was told that one of the side effects of chemotherapy is losing your hair. I had very nice hair, hair that was thick, and it wasn't creamed, but it was very thick and nice. And my doctor, the nurses had told me that be prepared for what to come. So one of the nurses, as I said, they treated me so good. They treated me like I was their daughter. She plucked up my hair and said, okay, let's plucked up the hair. And then when the time comes for it to come off, we'll just take out the plaits. So for about, before my surgery was in May, and I started getting the chemotherapy in about February while I was in the hospital. Before I went to the hospital, I started getting the chemotherapy, and while I was in the hospital, I was still getting doses of it. And it reached a point where it was time for my hair to go. So all this time in the hospital, my hair was in plait, and it started to, like, this is a plait, and then when you look at it, it's just like a little strand. It reached a point where now the hair was falling off, but because I was in the plait, it didn't really show. It reached a point where it was just like a strand that was holding it up. And one day, one of the nurses came in the room, and she said, Darina, I think it's time for you to let that hair go. You know, just unplait it, and let's just take it off and say he can start growing again. So I said, okay. And she came and we started pulling out the plaits. And as you lose the plaits just came off in your hand because there was nothing there to hold it anymore. So by the time she was finished, I was a bald baby. My hair was totally gone. I had no hair on my head. My hair was like my hand middle, bald. So, and at that time I looked like, you know, a young baby, because I was very slim. They call me, I'm going to use Jamaican patois for those who don't know Jamaican. I was very maga at that time.
And for those who can't interpret that, she was very, very slim. Tiny at that time.
Right.
But you know what I want to say though, Doreen, because I know you're going to talk about your friend, but I want to tell you that what Psalms 139 says, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And for all you out there that's watching, doesn't matter what the reflection looks like, doesn't matter what the mirror will try to tell you, remember that you are God's masterpiece. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. Go ahead, Doreen.
Right. So my hair became bald, and my grandfather carried a cap for me. It was a white cap, I remember so vividly. It was a white cap with a peak. So that was my new hairdo, my cap. So I have a friend by the name of Gina Jackson, right? She's like my childhood friend, even though we're very good friends. Whenever I go to Florida, sometimes I stay with her, and she's always there for me and my daughter. You know, I have God has placed some wonderful friends in my life, a lot of them. They're so numerous that I'm going to call some of them name, but if I don't call everybody's name, you know yourself. And thank you all for everything you have done for me and continue to do. So one day, Jeanette came to look for me, and her uncle was like a father to me. He used to love me. People used to, you would think that man is my father. He used to love me unconditionally. You know, he would do anything for me, because I used to go to Jeanette's house a lot. You know, because she lived down the road from me, and her home was like my home, and my home was like her home. So when I was in the hospital and my hair was gone and my leg was gone, her uncle took her, Uncle Lope, took her to look for me. And I was lying down, and the cap fell off my head. So when Gina came in the room, and she looked in there, she said, this girl with bald head. And she didn't know that that had happened, right? So she, I just run out the room and right through the door. And when I saw her back, her uncle came with her. You know, I guess she was just seeing me like that without any hair, my leg gone and everything. But she came back and, you know, we talked and laughed about it. Even this morning, I called her and I said, Jeanette, I'm going to talk about you. I'm going to tell them the story about when you run out of the room and you saw me with a bald head. And she laughed. But yeah, Jeanette, thank you for your friendship. You know, I love you. You have been there for me. You know, I've been friends for years and I really appreciate your friendship towards me. And yeah, so she ran out of the room and came back and, you know, everything was fine after that. So it was now time, as I was in healing process, and it was now time to go home. And I was discharged. My doctor, as a matter of fact, my leg was donated to, I think it was the Connor Regional Hospital. They had asked if they could donate it to the hospital for them to do some research. And I think it was taken to Kingston, I think UA Hospital, for them to use it as a in their labs to, you know, to do research. And as I said, this doctor was still in my life. And he was there throughout, and it was not about the money for Dr. Herod. It was about saving my life, as I said before. And, you know, he was a trooper. And up until now, he's still, I'm going to tell you later on of something that he said to me, which really moved me and really let me realize, you know, the goodness of God, how great God is, and that he has a purpose here for me. So everything from, as I said, my mother died when I was 4 months old. At 15, I lost my leg. And like things was just happening in my life. But right along the way, God just placed people in my life strategically that would help me to overcome, help me to get through the perils that was to come my way. Because all of us, we all have a story. And our life is written down from when we were born up until now. And our story is there. And as we go through it, he knows us, knows our story. So he gives all of us a heart, you know, and it's just how we use it. It's how we, as an individual, just call on him, you know, and just reach out to him. Maybe I wasn't reaching out how I should have, but I'm realizing now the things that this man, this great man has done in my life, how he placed people in my life who were going to be important, you know, who was going to get me to be able to be here right now, speaking to all of you, giving you hope and giving you, you know, just letting you know that there is, that it doesn't matter what happened to you in life, that, you know, once you accept it, and once you decide to live, there is nothing that can stop you. Nothing that can stop you from living your purpose. Nothing that can stop you from moving ahead. People will look at me and say I'm a disabled person. I am not a disabled person because I can do anything. You know, nothing stops me. I do just about anything because my friends will tell you, when I went to CAS, I used to go out a lot. I used to party, you know. Having one leg did not stop me one bit, you know. And I had some friends that I used to hang out with after college during my working days. So up until recently, I still go out, but not as often as before. I can think of Tina Fletcher. I can think of Maureen Garden. I can think of Diana Morant. I can think of Suzette Davy. I can think of Christine. I can think of so many other friends that I hang out with, and they can tell you, we love 70s, 80s music, and we used to go to 70s, 80s party a lot back in the days. And Maureen and Tina can tell you that when the 70s, 80s music start, I used to give them they used to be the person who hold my crutch for me, and I give it to them, and I just start to party, and I just start to dance, especially when the disco music start, because that's my music. And sometimes when Tina is not near, Maureen have my two legs dancing with while I'm there, hitch up in the corner, and I just start to move to the music because life, I still had life, you know. And having one leg doesn't mean that my life has stopped. It doesn't mean that I'm no longer living. It means my life continues. It continues in a different mood. It continues with one part of my body gone, but my everything else works, you know. And I had gotten a prosthesis, but because of where my leg cut, it's very difficult to use. So I use it. I can tell you, people, I use it once. And it's when I was practicing to walk in the house with it, and I just parked it afterwards because it was keeping me back. And I'm a girl. People tell you I love to move. I do everything for myself. And yeah, I drive. I own my own car, and I drive because my life did not stop, as I said before. I use my circumstances to make my life better, to build me. I didn't make it affect me, you know. I just continue to live my life because life went on for me. And as I said, I have friends. I used to go out and party, and because my life did not stop. But as time goes by, you know, I became a chartered accountant. When I went to CAS, I majored in accounts. And right after leaving CAS, I decided to do my ACCA, and I did it. It took me a little time because I had failed one exam I don't like reading. Right, and one of the papers is an audit paper. I had studied for that paper, and I'm telling you, I spent 6 months studying for the paper, and I passed. I failed it by 2 marks, and it mashed me up mentally. Trust me, because there were at that time when I was doing it, there were 3 sub papers you had to do all at once, right? And you add up pass 2 and get out like in the 40s for the other one, and and if you get in the 40s, you can do it over. But each time the ACCA keep changing, the rules keep changing and everything. And I did that. I studied for that paper for 6 months. And there was one of the papers that I did not concentrate on. And I wasn't going to go to the exam. But I ended up studying for the day before the exam. And I ended up passing that paper. You know, I went home the evening, and I just took out some articles, took out some past papers, and I studied. And that exam, the one I took 6 months to study, because it was harder for me, because I don't like reading. And I got 48, and the pass mark was 50. You know, it mentally just blocked. I had a mental block for it. So when I passed everything else, all the other subjects, I had one paper to pass. And I just could not pass it because I just mentally blocked it. And one day I said, God, you know, I have done this exam so many times, and I just can't pass it. What's wrong? And I said, the last time I did it, I said, God, this is the last time I'm doing this paper. I said, Doreen, if I fail or pass, I'm not doing it again. And that night I studied. During that period, I studied for the exam. And while I was in that exam, this is God working again. This is God showing his glory. This is God showing that, you know, no matter what you're going through, I am there with you. And I was in that exam, and I can tell you, people, I felt like somebody was writing that paper for me. I'm serious. I felt like there was somebody there. I've never written so much on an exam before. I wanted to use the bathroom, and I did not get up because I said, no, I have to finish this paper because I'm passing it. And I actually felt like somebody was holding my hand and writing that paper for me. And I said, that was the last exam I had to pass. I passed all the other papers, and I said, this troublemaker one would not give me the time of day. And I remember when results came out that night, I was up late waiting. Everybody else, all my other friends, how they get their results, and I could not get mine. And I'm like, I could not sleep. And then when I went on, I saw, congratulations, pass, you know, and it's just patience, having the patience, that is very important. Being patient, you know, because sometimes we try to rush things, but God's timing, most times it's not our timing. You know, we might want to rush things. We might want things to just go by. We might want things to move fast. But there are times when God's timing is just not our timing. It was just not my time then, but my time came, and he made sure that I knew it because he sat with me in that exam, because I literally feel like somebody was sitting beside me, as I said before. I've never written so much in that exam before, and I knew it was God because he knew that I was going to pass that exam.
And so, you know what I just want to add there, just for all the viewers that are watching? With God, with man, it's impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And so it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. As long as you believe in God, you hope in God, you trust in God, then you know that God will come through for you. And I just want to add, because Doreen didn't mention it, but for anybody who knows Dunn's River Falls, Doreen actually ran Dunn's River Falls twice. So I'm trying to tell you about the God that we serve. He is the God where nothing is impossible. With one leg, she has climbed Dunn's River Fall, and she swam a part of the way while she was climbing on Dunn's River Fall. But Doreen, I'm going to ask you to fast forward to where are you today? In 35 years later, where are we today? Where are you today?
Well, I can see I got 10 years to live. I've surpassed that by 35 years. It's over 35 years since I lost my leg. Over 35 years since I was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, which is cancer of the bone. And the glory of God, I am still alive. You know, I am here. And God has just been working in my life. And there's something I want to say. A friend of mine, let me tell you something, people. It doesn't matter what people think of you. It's what you think of yourself. It's what you can do. A friend of mine, as I said, sent me something recently on Facebook where this young lady, she was on my page, I saw it too, where this young lady posts something that nobody don't like her because she has one leg and nobody will post her picture or like her picture. Let me tell you something. What matters is how you feel about yourself, and it's how God feels about you. What he thinks of you is what is important. You know, I can share something with you, and I'm going to laugh about it. I remember I used to hang out with my cousin and some friends, and there's this young man that I know, and you know, we're good friends and everything. And one day he said to me, "You know, Doreen, you're a beautiful girl, but I don't think I can date a girl with one leg." And I said to him, "That's okay." I said, "I mean, I understand, that's fine, nothing is wrong with that. But can I tell you guys something?" Deep down, I said to myself, "God, forgive me for saying this." I said, "But I don't understand this young man. Why do you think I want to date him?" But anyway, you know, it doesn't matter what people think of you. It's what you think of yourself. As I said, I came into this world with my two legs. I came into this world, okay. But circumstances presented itself where I had to lose my leg, and I accepted it. Accepting it means that my life continues, because I haven't sat down to put my life on hold. I haven't sat down to, you know, to moan about it. I haven't sat down to feel sorry for myself. I work very hard. I move up and down. You know, I have a beautiful daughter. She is so bright. Her name is Brianna Douglas. And I'm telling you, she's the best thing that ever happened to me. My friends will tell you, God knew what he was doing when he put that little girl into my life. You know, she's the only child that I have, but I'm telling you, losing my leg has changed how I look. Maybe it has changed. I believe it has changed how I have conducted my life, meaning that I think about people, other people, and not just myself, you know, because God, when he was on earth, he never thought about himself. Remember, he died on the cross to save us. So it wasn't about him. It was about us, saving the world, right? So I try to mirror my life in that way by helping others. I can tell you things that I have done, you know, because I believe it is the right thing to do. I believe that when we reach out to others, when we, even with this pandemic going on, you know, we see so many things happening and we wonder why. The first thing comes to your mind, why are people so selfish? It can't be about just us alone. It has to be about the world. It has to be about others, because our decision can affect somebody else's life, you know, and we can't just think about ourselves. If it means that we have to lock down to save a life, that life is important, just like how our own is important. You know, if we have to lock down to stop the spread, then it is the best thing to do. Because as they always say, as the minister and the prime minister always say, the virus moves with us. When the virus moves, it's because we move. You know, it doesn't move by itself. So we have to stop sometimes and think not just about the effect it has on us, but the effect it has on the wider community. There's a little girl, her name is Akela Webb. And I was working at Azan Supercenter, and I'm telling you, that was one of the best jobs I had, because I had a boss who I could relate to, Mr. Azan. As a matter of fact, he's one of my daughter's godfather. He loves her dearly. He treats her as if she's his grandchild, because she calls him grandpa. And while I was working there, there was a young lady that was working in the store, and she had a little daughter named Akela. And one day she was taking her to the doctor. So I was the accountant there, the chief accountant. So I had my own office. And she was in the store by the security. And I went down there, and God was just working again, you know. God, I saw her, and I'm like, I saw her there for a long time. And I went up to her and I talked to her, and I realized I was told that it was one of the workers' daughter. And she and I just clicked to her, you know. I took her into my office and made her wait until it was time for her mother to take her to the doctor. And I became attached to that little girl. So I started to inquire about her, and I inserted myself in her life by saying, okay, I want to be her godmother. And I became a part of her life. And I started helping with her and everything, going to look for her, take her on weekends sometimes. And while she was in St. Andrew High School, while in fourth form, she was preparing for her exams, and I took her into my home. And because where she was living at that time, when I used to go and look for her, I never feel comfortable. She's a beautiful young lady, and I never feel comfortable her being there. So I took her into my home and started sending her to school. She needed help with some subjects, and I got her into extra classes and prepared her for exams. And she got her exams, passed all her exams, and got her the very good grades. And now it reached a point where, you know, she was big now and moved out and everything. And I can see she's almost finished at UA, and she has her two babies. She's engaged now and everything. But God put me in her life, and I became a part of her life. And just to see that I got help when I was young, and God was able, I was able to return that favor by helping another child, you know, to fulfill her dreams, to not to be led out there, because, you know, the influence out there is great, you know. So God put me in a part to be a part of her life, God working again. You know, you just see my story, and you just see how God has been working. God has been, you know, strategically placing people in my life, placing me in other people's lives, you know. And I can tell you also with my daughter's friends, from she was going to prep school, I always formed study groups. When they were preparing for their GSAT exam, I formed study groups where I have them in my house, you know, doing revision classes, teaching them myself, marking papers and everything. And when they all passed for very good high schools, Immaculate, St. Andrew High, you know, those are the prestigious high schools in Jamaica. And my daughter goes to Immaculate. And I can tell you that I always insert myself in her friends' lives, in all of her friends' lives, you know. From she started high school, I formed study group for them from grade seven up until fifth form, where I have them at my house studying. And I ensure that they are, you know, prepared for the exams. And when they were in fourth form, preparing for CSEC, because CSEC is an external Caribbean exam, and it's a 2-year program. So I'm an accountant and I know accounts good. So they were all doing accounts, about 7 or 8 of them. And I know what it is to pay a lot of money for extra classes, because as a parent, I make sure that my daughter is well schooled. You know, I will spend just about any amount of money to make sure that she has the necessary tools to be able to go into the world. So I send her to extra classes. She's already bright, but you know, the extra class really helps. And you know, I monitor her grades and everything. And I also do it for her friends. So from grade 7, as I said before, I formed study group for them up until fifth form. And I also got them into extra classes for accounts where I taught them myself. And they all got distinctions for their exam. They all got grade 1. Wow. You know, the night before the exam, I was up with them until late. They're calling me, auntie, what is answer for this? Auntie, why? And, you know, I made sure that there was one of her friends who went to Jamaica College, and he was going to drop accounts. And, you know, he and his mom and I were talking, and I said to him, don't drop it. I'm going to help you, because he was lagging behind and he wasn't getting the right help. And I took him under my wings, and I would go, they would tell, I had them at my, before COVID, I had them at my house, and I would go for them. Some of them, the parents would drop them up here, and I have them in my living room, and I teach them accounts. I cook for them, I feed them. They make sure that they don't eat before they come in, because they know that Auntie Doreen is going to cook, and I'm going to cook and teach them. And I have them in my living room, and I taught them accounts. And he, as I said, he was going to drop it, and I tell him no. His name is Jordan, and I said, Jordan Gustin, and I said, Jordan, don't drop it. And I would teach him personally, you know, outside of the group, because he was behind them. And he got grade 1 too. And he wow. went and did Cape 1 accounts for someone who was going to drop accounts. Now he likes it, you know. And I'm just saying that it can't be about us alone, you know. It has to be about everybody. We have to insert ourselves in people's lives. Too much time, we just complain about everything. You know, things are going bad. You know, things can be better, but it can't be better if we are not a part of it. You know, if we don't make a change or be a part of the change that we want to be, then it will never happen, because God gave us wisdom. You know, when I was going through the chemotherapy, although it made my body ill, it was God working medicine on me to make sure that I'm alive today.
Wow.
And I'm going to share something that I...
Sorry, Doreen. We're probably going to have to do part 2, because we're just out of time. I know your story is powerful. And I know for everyone that's out there that's hearing Doreen's story, I know that, you know, you have been blessed. I will bring Doreen back another time so we can continue the conversation on about her story. But there's one thing I want to say, and if you're watching now, you'll see Doreen constantly smiling throughout the entire show. For the entire hour that we've been on, Doreen has been constantly smiling. And I'm really moved by her story, because Doreen and I went to high school together. And I used to remember Doreen walking in the schoolyard on her crutch, but I never knew her story. I never understood what such a young girl at age 15, you know, missed out on her sweet 16. I never understood what she went through. But as I reflected, I can remember seeing Doreen. She was always smiling. Oh, regardless of her walking on that crutch, she was always smiling. Her eyes were always bright, beautiful, and happy. I had no idea. We'll share when she comes back on how she had to walk to school a good distance on the crutch and walk back home. So we'll talk more about that, Doreen, when I have you back on. We can probably just do the part 2 next week if you're free. But, you know, I had no idea about her phantom pains. And Doreen know what I told her about that. I said, Doreen, cast down that imagination. Because if the doctors are saying it's not a real pain, but it's a pain in her mind, then the word of God says to cast down that vain imagination and bring every thought captive to God. And so we talked about that. We're going to talk about that some more, Doreen. But as Doreen says, it's not about us. It's about everyone. And as you heard Doreen's story, she comes full circle and she's now giving back to others, just as how people took care of her and walked her journey with her. Doreen is now giving back to others. And so I just want to say to you that the next time you see someone, be careful what lens you look at them through. Don't be quick to pass judgment, but be quick to show mercy and be quick to show love. Because Doreen's story is so powerful that even my own heart is moved. And Doreen, when I shared with Dr. Maxine Dwyer, that you were going to be on the show, she wrote me back, and this is what she said, and I just want to read it. Dr. Maxine is one of our high school friends. She said, our church group all went to visit Doreen at Cornwall Regional Hospital after she removed her leg due to cancer. We were so young at the time, yet Doreen was very courageous. I will never forget the strength she displayed at that time. Doreen, what a strength, what a courage, what a resilience. I am so amazed, and I'm so amazed because I knew you in high school, but had no idea about the extent or the depth of your story. And so I want to say thank you. I really, from the bottom of my heart, want to say thank you. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being so inspirational. Thank you for just sharing your story with joy. I mean, that is the joy of the Lord. That could be nothing else, people. That's how we go through trials. That's how we overcome, the joy of the Lord. Because God will take what the enemy meant for evil and he will turn it around for your good and for his glory. And so what you're seeing on Doreen today is just pure joy, pure glory, pure peace, and that only comes from God. So Doreen, I just want to thank you for coming on today, and we're going to talk more. We'll connect afterwards and bring you back on so you could finish sharing how you're now changing lives. You're now changing lives. It's not about her. She's now changing the lives of others, because when the doctor said they don't normally live, or when the doctor said that the lifespan is 10 years, 35 years later, and Doreen is still here, 35 years later, and she's still making an impact. So Doreen, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing this story. And I pray for everyone out there right now that God will bless you. And whatever you're going through, that God will be your comforter. And God will be your healer, just as he healed Doreen, just as he comforted Doreen. And I pray that the peace of God will pass all understanding and guard your hearts. And I pray that as you go through the valley, know that God is there with you. Know, like Doreen, that he will never leave you and he will never forsake you. Know that you're never alone. And know that he will turn your mourning into joy. And he will wipe away those tears because he loves you. And if he did it for Doreen, he will do it for you. And so I just want to say, God bless you, everyone. Thanks for joining. Don't forget to like the broadcast. Don't forget to share the broadcast of this powerful story that I'm sure will change life. So if your life has been changed, please like the broadcast and share the broadcast. Doreen, I am so sorry that we had to end, but we're going to continue this story because I know you have so much to share and so much that the world needs to hear. And so I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on this show. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to close with one final comment. What would you like to say to the viewers?
Thanks, everyone, for being here. And I hope my story has inspired you to just live life, live it to the fullest, but in a good way. And do not leave God out of your life, because without him, you know, your life will be not what it's supposed to be. It can be better if you just include him in it. You know, I got baptized in July, and trust me, it's the best thing I've ever done because I'm at peace. You see me smiling here now? You see me with this? I just don't make anything bother me anymore because there's peace within me because of the decision that I made, you know, and God is our strength. So dig deep down and just be, let him be the main part of your life. And that's what I am doing right now.
Amen.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity, this platform to share my story.
No, thank you. No, I am honored and I am humbled by your story. So thank you so very much, Doreen, and God bless you. And we'll talk offline. Everyone, this is the end of the show. We did go over time, but I really wanted to hear Doreen's story. I really wanted her to share your story. So thank you for sticking through with us. Thank you for being here today to hear such a powerful story, and God bless you. And don't forget, we exist to know Jesus and to share Jesus, just as Doreen has done today. God bless you, and we'll see you next week, same time. And we may have Doreen back. I'll have to check with her schedule. If not, see you next week on One Word eTalk. God bless you.